to be united or lorded over. From what my scouts could tell, there is intense fighting amongst the clans. They may not care for our troubles, even though they are ultimately affected by them. You would be entering into an extremely volatile situation. Yeah, as opposed to what is going on now, I said. You know what I mean. We must at least warn Dinarth and have them send delegates to Robert's Land to warn them. The one thing we have in our favor is that it does not appear as if Lunos is pushing his werewolves as hard as Xavier did, Bailey said. No, he understands the benefits of keeping up the troops' morale and strength. He's found a balance of keeping them on his side while he destroys their kind. We need to figure out a way to tip that fucked-up scale. It has been a long enough day. We will be in Dinarth tomorrow afternoon. Perhaps we should all get some rest. Before I could protest, Bailey had ordered the column to stop and prepare to set up shelters and get dinner prepared. I was going to stay up and ponder the wonders of being alive again, and, more importantly, what being human felt like. But once I finished my meal, I could barely keep my eyes open. If I had known better, I would have sworn my food had been drugged. I wasn't yet used to being mortal, with the physical limitations that came with it. It was incredible to know that I would finally be able to be with Tracy again, that there was, indeed, a light at the end of this extremely long and foreboding tunnel. It was a strange place I found myself in. I could think of no sweeter reward than to be in her arms, but now that I was human, I wanted to savor all that entailed. I looked forward to dying at some point, just not right now. Yet I could not get the feeling out of my head that the time left afforded to me was in a very small hourglass, the bottle already upturned, and the sand pouring through at an alarming rate. Chapter 5. Mike Journal Entry 5. The next morning brought with it something I had not experienced in many years. A sore throat, a general feeling of malaise, a tightness in my chest, and a stiffness of my muscles. I had a fucking cold. Motherfucking germs. I inadvertently swallowed a particularly thick and chunky congealed wad of phlegm. Oh, that's just fucking gross, I coughed. You do not look all that well, Bailey said. She was dressed in some formal robes that somehow gave her an even more regal appearance. There is not a time or a place on this earth that she would not have garnered deep respect, admiration, and awe. She was a beauty almost without compare. How in the fuck she was in BT's lineage, I would have to ask him when I got to see him. Kind of weird to get the warm and fuzzies thinking about one's death, but that was exactly how I felt. As long as I didn't fuck up too bad on this, my 432nd chance at life, I should be all right. I could barely keep my head up as we came closer to the city limits of Dinarth. Much like Talbotton, they had also been busy increasing the stalwartness of their walls. They had not been as willing to relinquish their old wooden timbers, though, and instead had built something taller and stronger right behind the original structure. Had to admit it was rather formidable looking. What was nice was that the front door was basically wide open. They were not expecting trouble and looked to be willing to accept any and all visitors. That was indeed a significant change from the Dinarth I knew. A horn sounded from the wall, trumpeting our approach, would be my guess. Bailey stopped a respectful distance away as we waited for the greeting committee. A different guard holding a rifle waved at us in a friendly enough gesture. Do not even think of flipping him off, Michael. Our two communities are closely tied, and he will know what it means, she said quietly to me. The thought had sort of crossed my mind, but even thinking about raising my sore shoulders to pull off the small maneuver seemed too difficult. Bailey! Lana shouted from the parapet. I was hoping I would see you soon. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right there. We watched her run to what must have been steps, and then she descended out of our view. "Where the hell does she think we're going to go?" I asked sourly. Bailey tisked. "She should not be running. That is not appropriate action for the governor of Dinarth." "Lana is running the show? Are you kidding me?" Her father stepped down after his mishandling of the crisis. It was almost a unanimous decision on the council's part to elect her governor. "And all those people in there are all right with a 19-year-old telling them what to do." "You yourself said there is more to Lana than befalls the eye. They see that, too." "Fine. Use my own words against me, and me too sick to defend myself." Lana was barreling through the gate, and had made it about halfway to us when her steps began to falter before slowing, then stopping completely. "What is this vision before me, Bailey?" she asked, a noticeable tremor in her voice. "Governor," came a questioning query from above when they saw her hesitation. "Surprise," I said, as I got down off my horse. "This cannot be." "Oh, it can be. Are you a wraith?" "I'm as real as you are, Lana." I took a step toward her. To her credit, she didn't back up or even run, but she sure didn't come any closer either. She turned to face the guard. "Please tell my betrothed to meet me outside the gate." She looked back over her shoulder before turning around. "You do not look well. Was the other side unkind to you?" "It was indeed unkind, but that is not the reason I look like this. I have a cold." "I did not think a vampire could catch a cold, Michael." "They can't." Her face lit up when she realized what I was saying. This time she did back up a step, but it was only so she could get more speed as she rushed towards me. "I bruise easily." I put up my hands and braced for impact. I'd played football for years, and I'd been crushed by some of the meanest linebackers I knew. They had nothing on Lana. She drove through me like I wasn't even there. I was pushed over. She landed on top of me. I grunted as she forced all the air from my lungs. "You're real," she squealed, kissing my face. "Governor Saltinda, what will your subjects think?" Bailey asked. "They will think that I am very excited to see a dear old friend." She had looked up and stopped kissing me for a few seconds before she resumed. "Ahem." Matthew cleared his throat. He was walking up to the spectacle before him. "We have been apart for less than an hour, yet when I find you, you are on the ground kissing a stranger. Should I be concerned, my love?" There was humor in his voice. "I do not think you should worry." Lana had got off of my stomach and was helping me up. There was a choked sob from Matthew. His eyes immediately watered. He had lost his voice as it caught in his throat. Tears, free-falling from his eyes, cascaded down his face. He quickly spanned the distance between us and embraced me in a hug that threatened to crack my ribs. He was finally able to get out. "I've missed you. I've missed you too, man." I did my best to escape his death clinch. "How are you here?" he asked as he stepped back, unabashedly letting tears continue to fall. "I heard you were having a Chinese food buffet at your wedding, plus an open bar. There was no way I was going to let death cheat me of that." "Come, come, I made a new beer called Talbot Brow in your honor." "Wait." Now it was my turn to cry. "There's a beer named after me?" Not sure I even need to write down how the night went, especially since at some point I got so blackout drunk I decided to take off the majority of my clothes and go caterwauling through the streets of Dinarth, singing a bad rendition of Frank Sinatra's My Way. Matthew and I ended up in a bed together, his arm draped over me in the most manly of ways. I didn't give a shit, even when Bailey pushed my shoulder to wake me up. "Do you have no scruples? This man is engaged to be married." She was smiling. "He has beer. I'm a beer whore. What do you want from me?" I pushed Matthew off me. He landed on the floor with a heavy thud. He sat up. "I like mules." Then he went back down and was snoring before I could get my pants on. "What happens now?" I asked her as I put my boots on. "Dinarth sent some delegates to Robert's Land, and we hope that they heed the warning. Why don't we just send an army? An army would be spotted long before we could arrive. That, in and of itself, would be considered a declaration of war. This is the way it must be done. You do realize that the town could fall long before we are able to create diplomatic ties, right?" I did not say we are not going to do anything. I just said we can't go marching on force to Robert's Land. My brain was still foggy from the previous night, but I was able to figure out what she meant. "We're bringing the fight to Lunos. I see no other choice. Lunos is going to know that. He's too damn smart for our own good." "Do you propose a better idea?" Bailey asked. If I wasn't so damn hungover, I would actually laugh at the notion of having a better idea. "Or a thought, really. It was Lana. What have you done to my intended?" She was peeking in through the doorway. "I gave him a walk on the wild side, a night he'll never be able to forget. When he wakes, just tell him I can't quit him. It'll make absolutely no sense to him, but it will make me immeasurably happy." "And where are you going?" She'd come into the room and lightly pushed against Mathieu's rump with the toe of her boot. He grunted something about not being a machine and fell back asleep. Lana had a splash of red creep up her neck and wash across her cheeks. I smiled. One way or the other, she was going to be the death of him. "I think Bailey and I have a date with Lunos. We are going to go and kick some werewolf ass, then let the world take a collective sigh before the next set of monsters are revealed. Given the current set of circumstances, I don't imagine it will take too long either." "Wow," I shook my head. "That was a heavy dose of pessimism, wasn't it?" I looked to Bailey. She nodded. "Sorry, I'm not usually that bad. Maybe I should drink a little to take the edge off. I think you've had enough." Bailey pulled me out of the room. "Can one truly have enough?" I asked longingly. "I will have him up and ready in 15 minutes, Lana told us. "Why?" Bailey and I asked back in unison. "To fight with you, obviously," she replied. Bailey beat me to the next sentence, but not by much. "You are the leader of Dinarth, Lana. You cannot leave your gates to fight. We will gladly accept some soldiers, though. I will not send our sons and daughters off to fight while I sit back in relative safety. And what of you, Bailey? Are you not the leader of Talbotton? Yet here you are, ready to go into battle." "She's got a point," I said. "That's the best you can offer to the discussion." Bailey turned her mounting wrath towards me. "Hey, I'm not the one that came up with a faulty argument." I'd put my hands up, and you sure can't say it's 'cause she can't fight, because we know that's not the truth. Come on, it'll be like old times. Bailey was far from mollified. If I had to hazard a guess, I'd say I was pretty lucky she hadn't given me a black eye. Within the hour, we were once again on the road. My stomach sounded like I had placed a 5-gallon bucket full of hamburger helper into a washing machine, and it was now on the rinse cycle. There were all sorts of unsavory noises going on amid our column as we moved out through the gates of Dinarth. My digestive system felt like it was going through one of those old-time ringers. It was so loud my horse kept looking back at me in disgust. I'm not kidding. He would shake his head and whinny at me every time. I told him I was sorry. He didn't give a shit. For as bad as I was doing, Mathieu was worse. He could barely stay atop his horse. It had gotten so bad that at one point Lana made him sit behind her and lashed his hands around her waist. After the third time he tried to pull her off with him, she'd given up on that strategy. I think he had the lowest tolerance of any brewmaster in history. Luckily, by about noon, he started to come around. We stopped for a break and to get a small meal. Mathieu had lost some of his greenish tinge and was more a waspish lily white at the moment. "Still too many impurities in the beer," he'd told me. He had to swallow back a couple of times as he watched me tear into some rabbit jerky. "Want some?" I held out a piece that looked suspiciously like a foot. He gagged. I smiled. Guys are assholes. Of course it was my obligation, damn near my duty, to kick him while he was down. "Why are you not sicker?" he asked suspiciously. "Maybe I'm not as big a baby as you." I don't think Matthew liked my answer very much. "You told me you had a cold," he said, before flipping me off and walking away to give his stomach one more purging before he got back on his mount. I really liked it better when no one knew what that meant, and maybe your beer has medicinal qualities. I ate the jerky and searched out some stew that looked like it had been made from mole meat. I sucked that down, too. We mounted up and were heading back on our way. Scouts had reported that Lunos had taken up a defensive position some 20 miles from us, so presumably he had his own scouts. That worked in our favor. At least Robert's Land would be safe for a bit. Matthew and myself had fallen back to the rear of the column, his head lolled about. That is, when he wasn't peering at me. "What, man? I'm not the one that tried to poison us," I entreated. "I will have to refigure the recipe. Something in the beer is not interacting well within me. I'm just not sure why it is not doing the same to you. Maybe you have an allergy or something. Or maybe you are not entirely the man you believe yourself to be." "I have my soul," I growled at him. "I stole that motherfucker fair and square, and don't you ever try and deny me that. That, Michael, is not what I am implying. Are you completely sure you cast out that other part of you?" I didn't even realize that someone could be so angry that they could be literally unable to verbalize that anger. I spit. I felt veins of heat rising up my back and spread across my neck. My throat constricted. My heart beat fast, red clouded into the peripheral of my vision. I felt the phantom cracking of canines as they ghost elongated. If I thought killing him could have taken those feelings away, there was a chance I would have acted on them. I took a wiser course, which is not always the easiest thing for me. I turned my horse and went to the back of the column as quickly as I could. "I cannot allow anyone to stray from the column," the rear guard told me. "I'll just be a minute," I grumbled. He did not move away, but waited with me. "I need a minute alone," I stressed. "Do not dally, Mr. Talbot. We are being followed." Something in my expression must have told him not to press it any further, as he quickened his horse to catch up to the rest. I figured I had a few minutes where he would wait for me to return to my own before he sent word up to the front. Then people would come back to retrieve my ass. Now it was just a matter of how much time that was. I wondered if what I was about to do would be classified as insane. Matthew had given me food for thought, and an opportunity had presented itself to test his assertion out. "Brilliant, Talbot. You're going to listen to the words of a man who is so sick he threw up all over the side of his horse." "Well, let's just see how this plays out, I guess." I maybe should have asked the guard just exactly what was following us. I was letting my imagination get the better of me. I was already up to battle elephants, fully decked out in armor, and a squadron of arrow-wielding ninjas riding aloft, when two men came into view. Unlike the normal garden-variety peasants, these two looked well-fed and properly clothed. Both were tall and lean. I had a gut-wrenching thought that perhaps these weren't werewolves, but rather lichen in their camouflage. My horse snickered as I brought my rifle up. He stomped his two front feet as the men looked at us. "Steady, boy, steady." There was a decent amount of tension in the air, though I think all of it was coming from me. I had the man on the left clearly in my sights, but now what? He was merely a man, and I, as of yet, did not have a justifiable reason to blow his fucking head off, though I was clearly seeking one. They were saying something to each other, and when they were done, they began walking slowly toward me. "Stop right there," I told them. One shouted back to me in something that sounded a lot like he had a mouthful of food and had been punched in the stomach. Is that even supposed to be language? I shouted to him. I got the distinct impression of a questioning reply because of the uplilt at the end of his sentence, but what he was saying was unrecognizable. I'll blow your fucking heads off. I gave them a good view of the gun. Maybe we didn't understand each other, but that was a fairly universal gesture. Yeah, 200 fucking years ago, maybe, I berated myself. As far as these two were concerned, I might have been shaking my cane at them like old Mr. Farnsworth telling those darn kids to get off his dag-burned lawn. Still, they came, albeit slightly slower. Nobody wants to get whacked with a cane, right? Who was I to tell them they could not pass? This was obviously a well-used pathway, and it stood to rights that others would want and need to use it. How close could I allow them to come? The smart play now would be to turn my horse around and get gone, but if they were lichen, they could change over and chase me down long before we could reach escape speed. And somehow, the thought of turning tail and running from two men seemed undignified. Really, Talbot? You're planning on bringing dignity into this equation? The men had halved the distance. They were no longer saying anything, their gazes still held firmly to my own. Let's see if I can get your attention. I shot around far to the right of the closest one. It ricocheted off the ground and whined into the woods. The two men looked at the impact point, and then back to me. Calm as could be, like they were Nordic ice gods in the midst of a blizzard. Yeah, that's not too terrifying. I was trying to calm myself down. Maybe they just have no idea what happened. It at least got them to stop moving for a second or two. They split as far apart as the path would allow, and continued their approach. They had done no transgressions against me. They had not declared themselves an enemy. I could not outright shoot them simply because I was agitated. Blowing their heads off would be considered an overreaction at this point. Even in this lawless day and age, there was a good chance I'd get strung up for this. Plus, murder looked really bad in the loss ledger for one attempting a record-breaking atonement. Wouldn't put it past Lucifer to have thrown these two bastards into my path to tempt me to fail in my quest. I could hear the rapid approach of running horses, and so could my new traveling companions. They looked past me to each other, and then darted off into the woods. I let out a long, low, steady breath as Bailey came to a skidding halt next to me. She had 10 men with her. She looked out on the empty pathway, and then to me. We heard a shot. Is there anything you would like to tell me? Thought I saw a chupacabra. I turned my horse around and rejoined the column. Chapter 6 Mike Journal Entry 6. By the time we stopped for the night, we could see the fires burning from Lunos's camp. Maybe there were as many as 100 strong. Looked like a controlled forest fire. There wasn't a man or a woman among us that didn't know the type of numbers those fires represented. It seemed like we'd brought the fight right to his doorstep, yet none of us were quite ready to cross the threshold. Even Lunos didn't seem in any big rush to engage the enemy. One more night under the stars. You know what would make it even better? Fuck you, Mike. I finally feel human again, Mathieu said. If it is indeed one more night, I intend on being with the one I love. That's what I'm talking about. I'll go get our tent ready. How is it that your rebirth has already lost most of its luster? He was smiling as he said this. He stood, leaned over, and gave my shoulders a squeeze, then went to find Lana. What we had was real, man. Okay. Well, I'll miss your beer. The beer was almost poison, Mike. Not the first toxic relationship I've been a part of. I was alone after he left. Bailey and Lana and a few of the officers were planning an offensive in the morning. I generally don't get invited to strategy meetings, considering most of my ideas start with me running splat into the mix while screaming obscenities. I didn't hang out much with the other military personnel, either. Just not a whole lot of common ground. No pro teams of any sort, no sports cars, no pictures of hot girlfriends or wives to pass around. Shit, there wasn't even a deck of cards, as far as I knew. Not sure what they do for fun, other than talk about Leather Satchel Weekly or something. The last image I had before I drifted off to sleep was that of the two men on that pathway. It was no surprise that my dreams were interrupted with the sounds of gunshots and men and women shouting commands. I sat up. So much for dreaming. I quickly reached over and grabbed my rifle. We were under attack, though I could not tell from which direction as people were flying by me. I stood calmly, though every part of me wanted to start running pell-mell like those around me. More shots, some screams, maybe pain, maybe fear, off to my right. I went at a slight jog, quick enough that I could get there in time to help, but not so fast that I could not first ascertain exactly what I was getting into. A force of four men were tactically withdrawing from a group of 10 werewolves. For whatever reason, only one of the men appeared to have rounds. The others were thrusting out with bayonet-tipped rifles, attempting to keep the heavy animals at bay. One of the werewolves batted a rifle free. Another leaned in and bit savagely into the shoulder of the unarmed man, lifting him out of the pack of people he was in. High-pitched screams shredded the air as the werewolf violently shook him back and forth. Another werewolf bit through the side of the man's head. Instead of the animals descending on and eating the downed man, he was discarded and forgotten like last year's Christmas presents. I finally found myself enough in the clear that I could offer some fire support to that doomed trio. My first hasty shot took a chunk off the top of a werewolf's ear. 350-pound beast, and you pierce his ear. Nice shot, asshole. I'd not finished my sentence when I sent the next round downrange, striking my target high in the chest. That one, he felt. His massive hand went to the wound before he looked to where the fatal round had been delivered from. He took two more snarling steps and collapsed. Then there were nine. I killed two more in a similar fashion, though they had been busy, too, pulling down another of the trio. What I had not been expecting was for five of the werewolves to make a break for me. Nor in the fashion in which they did so. This shit was entirely too coordinated as they fanned apart, and instead of coming at me in straight lines, they were zigzagging. Being a lone gunman against five incredibly fast-moving targets in minimal light was not conducive to my continued survival. What little chance the two remaining men had rested on me holding my ground. Unfortunately, what little chance I had of my continued survival involved me running. I stayed. I know no other way. Maybe I'd die a hero, but that wouldn't matter much to me because I'd be dead. What would matter a shit ton would be if I lived a coward. What good is saving your own life if you constantly feel like shit for still being alive? I sprayed the rest of my magazine, bringing down two of the werewolves. One was for certain dead, as I'd taken off the top of his head to let a little starlight shine down on his brain. The other I had severely handicapped by punching a hole through the side of its spine. He was still clawing his way to me, but this would be long over one way or the other before he got to me. I hit the magazine release and reached for a non-existent ammo pouch. Well, not non-existent. It definitely existed. I just hadn't had the foresight to put the fucking thing on. Three werewolves, and me with a small black front-mounted blade. I was thinking it was going to be over rather quickly, and probably mostly painless, except for the stabbing pain where they tore into my flesh and then shredded it open like slow-smoked pork. Possibly my intestines would spill out onto the ground as they tore into the warm meat. Sure, all that would hurt, but how long could pain like that really endure? I'm sure a few minutes of the most unimaginable misery couldn't feel like weeks. Well, not like months, anyway. These were some of the smartest bastards I'd ever encountered. The moment they realized I wasn't shooting, their trajectory changed to a full-on assault, Full steam ahead. I raised my rifle head high. The nearest was in striking distance. I let loose a savage yell as he bit at me. His head jerked back just as I drove the bayonet into the soft of his neck. I had a moment of difficulty reconciling the way my strike had sheared off the side of his head. Didn't care, as I removed the bayonet and was swinging to my right to get to the next one. He looked like a puppet with a palsied puppet master. He danced around before falling heavily to the side. The last one was bounding off in retreat. Reinforcements had arrived. I sighed when I looked over and realized that only one of the original four men had survived. The skirmish appeared to be over, though for some the battle for life was just beginning. They'd hit hard and fast, inflicting casualties and grievous injuries along our whole line. We still had forward scouts that had not reported back in, and at this point it was doubtful they ever would. The remainder of the night was spent on high alert. There were a few sightings, and two brief encounters. Not once did I ever suspect the entire thing for the ruse that it was. The dawning of the day brought with it the realization that we'd been duped. Lunos had kept our entire army pinned down with nothing more than some fires and a dozen or so werewolves. He and the rest of his horde were nowhere around. All of this merely to escape into the night, Mathieu asked. I know that Lycan are cowardly, gutless beasts, but why not just slink away into the forest? That was a good question, and one that had been nagging me all morning as we walked among the ashes of the carefully constructed campfires. Bailey! I started running. Mathieu was close behind. She was with Lana. They were talking about which potential direction the werewolves had gone and how they were going to pursue. She looked up at my approach. I had to take a second to catch my breath. Robert's Land. This whole thing is a way to keep us busy while they strike Robert's Land. The camp set up, the attack, everything. Bailey looked at me. It took her two heartbeats to think on what I'd told her. There was no doubt in her voice as she ordered the men to mount up. We moved faster than I thought an armed column could. We were 5 miles out when we saw the smoke. 2 miles when the smell hit us. The dead littered the streets, townsfolk and werewolf alike. Lunos had suffered casualties, but Robert's Land had taken a catastrophic hit. At least half of the town was engulfed in flames. Besides the bodies and the ghosts of those that still lingered, Robert's Land was a wasteland. Nothing moved save the carrion birds that were amassing. Huge turkey vultures soared high overhead. Some found perches in the trees all around us, their watery black eyes drinking in the feast that awaited them. They could not have killed everyone, Bailey said. What about converted? I asked. That would be bad, Lana said. There were over 1,000 inhabitants of this town. There is another less savory alternative, Mathieu said. Luckily, nobody voiced it. We didn't need to. An army had to be fed, and an army that size had to be fed a lot. Do we look for survivors? I was feeling pretty impotent, and I don't toss that word around lightly. I expected a tumbleweed to blow down the center of town, and maybe the sheriff to ask why I'd come back to grace his streets. What I got instead was a rider on a horse, slathered in sweat, with foam dripping from its mouth. Battle! He screamed. 5 miles! Survivors here squaring off against Lunos! Get him a fresh horse! You must get us back there now, Lana ordered. We were a thundering herd of revenge, hell-bent on collecting our due. I could hear little else as we galloped our way to the fray. As a little kid, I'd oftentimes played at Cowboys and Indians, and had been the cavalry sweeping in when all seemed lost, and saved the day. I didn't hold out much hope that we would get there in time, or that we even had sufficient numbers to thwart the attack. But really, what were the odds that 150 years in the future I would be playing out a game that was 300 years removed to the past? It would be nice if I could tell you that I was an experienced enough rider that I was leading the pack, but in reality, for the most part, I was holding on for dear life. The Dinarthians, as resident experts, were leading the charge. A couple of Bailey's men and she herself were good enough to be in the vanguard. I found myself way in the back with some of the greener recruits and possibly injured horses. I can't imagine John Wayne would be back where I was, but I was doing the best I could. At first, I thought the random pops I heard were figments of my imagination, or possibly my shoulders were finally giving out as I pulled hard on the reins, struggling to stay seated. We were slowing up and spreading out as we came to a large field. We'd flanked the werewolves, whose attention, for now, was undivided on their quest to obliterate the Robertonians who had their backs to a large lake. It kept them from being surrounded, but it also kept them from escape. Though where they would go anyway was the question. By the time I got into position to deal some damage, the werewolves had indeed taken note of us. At least a third of them peeled off from the main group to keep us engaged. What is so fucking important about these inhabitants that they want to keep us occupied, I thought. Unlike the Robertsland populace, we were trained, we were armed, we were battle-hardened. We stood our ground, dropping werewolves by the score. They had too much distance to cover, and we could reach out and kill them from across that expanse, and I, for one, was perfectly fine with putting them down in rapid succession from the safety of our distance. Some were making it dangerously near. There was going to be no avoiding close-quarter combat. "Brace for impact!" It was Lana. Her horsemen had done their best to form a defensive perimeter around Bailey's shooters. Large, reinforced spears were thrust out, held in place by a special pocket sewn in the saddle. I had my doubts that it would hold up against the charging beasts, but considering that was the only thing standing between me and them, I was obligated to hold out a little faith. The werewolves made contact further down the line from me first. Wood cracked and bones splintered. It was impossible to tell whose. The werewolves' chest plates being punctured, the men's arms as they fought with large poles, or the horses' legs as they were forced to bear the full weight of a rampaging werewolf. Our lines were pushed back as the werewolves pressed the attack. Riders were unhorsed by sweeps of powerful arms, the job finished under the crushing bite of vicious canine jaws. The crack of so many rifles in such quick succession made it sound like we were in the world's largest microwave, popping a giant bag of popcorn. The smell didn't match up, though. The scent of fear and iron from blood dominated. Our lines had not broken. We'd absorbed the impact of the werewolves' attack. If anything, we'd rallied. That's the problem with war. The more you learn how to kill things, the better you get at it. These weren't farmers, shepherds, merchants anymore. These were soldiers. Yes, they were scared. Yes, they could die. But they would not flee, and they could hand out death just as easily as they could receive it. Another age ago, I trusted implicitly in my ability with the M16. I guess I still do. But there's just something about the way killing with the edge of a blade makes it personal. When my bolt held open, I didn't blink when I put it back in its rifle holster and withdrew my sword from its saddle scabbard. I wanted to feel the lives of those I pierced leave this world as I physically tore spirit from body, one enemy at a time. Somehow their deaths meant more if I took them by blade rather than bullet. I urged my horse forward and to the right where the heaviest concentrations of werewolves were. My sword held high, a battle cry rushed forth from my lungs and vibrated past my pulled back lips. I brought the blade down and laid open the broad back of the werewolf closest to me. A deep wound flayed open. His spine glistened in the noon sun before the connection from nerve center to extremities was severed, and he fell to the ground. I hacked, stabbed, slashed, and sliced through anything unfortunate enough to come into my range. Maybe a demon was no longer housed within me, but we'd been friends long enough that I knew how he worked. Unbeknownst to me, I had not realized that my fury had inspired a fair number of Talbotans, and we were now encasing the werewolves in an iron grip of destruction. We trampled the fallen underfoot, the horses having been trained to do just that. They were every inch an instrument of war as the weapons we held. They would rear up or kick out whenever a werewolf was within range, with ruinous results. In a half an hour, we had obliterated a third of Lunas's army. There was a cheer as Lana lopped the head off of our final opponent. "Charge!" I turned my horse and was leading him into the battle before us. I got low, my sword held out in front of me. Not half a heartbeat later, I could hear the rest of the men and women following. I cannot imagine the sight we made streaking across that opening. An army victorious, a bloodthirsty horde who could not be so easily sated. Werewolves began to turn in our direction when they saw us coming. We were outnumbered, and we didn't care. A distant horn sounded. Ours? Theirs? Who fucking knows? The werewolves turned to it, back to us, and then started to leave, and in a hurry. "No, you don't, you cowardly motherfuckers!" A running werewolf is easily as fast as a horse, and if pressed, they can keep pace longer. I didn't care. My goal was to chase them to the ends of the earth, where maybe they would fall the fuck off. There were some werewolves that were not moving quite as spryly as others, those that were injured in battle. Normally, killing those who are not at their peak is distasteful. I found I had no such compunction when I chopped the first of them down. I think I was pretty safe in assuming that they would think little of killing an injured human. We put down 20 or 30 this way before the main group became unobtainable. My right arm was as sore as if I'd pitched 10 innings of baseball. I had more blood on me than Carrie's stunt double, and my chest heaved like I belonged in one of those period romances my wife used to read. You know, the highbrow, bosom-heaving erotica stuff. "Have you had your fill?" It was Bailey. "Your tone has a hint of derision in it, Chairperson, but you have a very large smile on." She closed her lips. I admit it. Sitting at a table making decisions about the day-to-day operations of a township is not all that interesting, but I do not enjoy what we are doing here. "You keep telling yourself that. There's something primal, liberating, fuck, maybe invigorating about vanquishing one's enemies on the field of battle." "Are you well?" She changed the subject. I honestly don't know. I took a couple of whacks, and I'm sore as hell, but I won't know until I clean up and the adrenaline wears off. I was about to ask about Lana and Matthew when I saw them approaching the survivors from Robert's Land. I should have been preparing myself for what I saw. I mean, it was only a matter of time, right? Why, then, did it feel like I'd been simultaneously throat-punched and gut-kicked? I could see the dark red of a hood. Who it belonged to was never in question as it walked among the Robert's Land people. She'd somehow caught wind of the impending invasion on the psychic hotline network or some shit. Azeel. My Azeel had come to their aid, I'm sure bringing a fury only she could deliver. My horse seemed to want to go where I wasn't entirely sure I wanted to. I could see Azeel as she bent over from time to time to help those in need, but for the most part she was swallowed up by the people surrounding her and by Lana's troops going over. "You ready for this?" Bailey asked. Her smile had turned into a crooked smirk. I was as nervous as a 12-year-old at my first school dance. Was feeling a little guilty as well, like she was going to see the real reasons why I had fought so hard to recapture what I'd lost. Tracy was the loss of a heartbeat away now. Would the woman before me know just how much of me she had lost? Or maybe she'd known all along that you cannot possess what is unobtainable. "Aren't there more werewolves we could hunt down?" "You're not getting off that easy," she told me. When we got close enough, I dismounted and handed the reins off to one of the Dinarthians and began to thread my way through the crowd. Theoretically, I shouldn't have been able to tell where I was going, but like an arrow to its target, I walked. And, as if on some unspoken command, the people around us knew what was going on and acted accordingly. They created a small circular opening when I got near. I was looking at Aziel's back. She was leaning over, wiping the face of a small child. Not only had the crowd parted, it had got preternaturally quiet. Aziel stood. I could see the hard set of her shoulders as she was coming to the realization that something was going on. As she began the process of turning, I moved closer. I saw a couple of things in those next few moments I had never seen from Aziel. One was abject fear, and the other was a very large, distended belly. Her eyes rolled up and her body began to fold. I covered the final three steps and grabbed her before she collapsed to the ground. The crowd, thinking I'd done something harmful to her, quickly moved in. Chapter 7 Mike, Journal Entry 7 The night had crept in by the time she'd begun to stir. A small tent had been erected, and two midwives fussed over her, all the while doing their best to usher me out of the enclosure. Finally, one of the women threatened me with a stiff wire brush, so I left, but just long enough to get cleaned up. When I came back, I told them in no unspecific terms that I would not leave again, and if they didn't stop trying to force me out, I would beat them with the flat of my sword. At some point, they left to get some sleep. I had a seat and was waiting next to Aziel's cot. I would sometimes hold her hand, other times brush her hair away from her forehead. One moment she was breathing softly, deep in sleep. The next, her eyes shone brightly as they peered up at me. "Are you real, Michael Talbot?" "For the most part." My face stung as her hand shot out and across my cheek. "Where have you been?" she demanded. "Cabo," was all I could think to tell her. "You got fat." She laughed. We laughed. She cried. We cried. I held her as tight as I dared to. "So I die, and you basically get knocked up as fast as you can. You were insufferable. I could not wait until you were gone so I could join E. Farmany. So that's like Cousin Lem's kid or something," I laughed. "Cletus, actually." Her gaze turned almost demure. Aziel the Red Witch looked vulnerable. "You know they're yours, right?" "They? Are you having a litter? You really know how to make a woman feel special. I've traveled across the non-negotiable to be with you. I would think that would make you feel special. We both know you didn't do it completely for me. I'm right here, right now, Aziel. What more can you ask of me? I am back from a place where second chances are not granted. I have fought between heaven and hell." "Twins, okay? I'm having twins, not a litter," she acquiesced. "Do I need any sort of paternity testing?" "They're yours, believe me. They give me heartburn when I drink water and they cause me endless headaches. They're still all day and kick without mercy no matter what time I attempt to lay down. I have to admit there are some good correlations there. And what the hell are you doing in the middle of a war in this condition?" "The world needed another savior when you left," she began to cry. "It's okay. Hey, it's okay. It's the damned hormones. You, I'm still pissed at." I had to smile at that. "How did you know they would be coming?" "I would like to say it was purely by chance, but we both know how naive that would be. I had gone far from my home in search of a route that eases discomfort. One of your babies has a head as hard as stone, and it is sitting heavily on my pelvis." She was glaring at me as if all of this were my fault. Sure, I'd been to the party, but I didn't drink all the Kool-Aid by myself. "Werewolves. We were talking about the werewolves and how they were going to invade Robert's land." I was trying to gently steer her back on course. "Root. Remember the route?" She dialed it back. I'd no sooner found a patch of what I was looking for when I heard their approach. It was two of them, Men, decently dressed, walking down the path. I was off to the side and was going to get back on the trail and offer them a greeting. Then, I can't explain it. I got the feeling they were hunting, not game, but rather me. I thought perhaps I was overreacting. All of my emotions have been playing havoc on me lately. She took a moment out of her explanation to glare again. I get it, I get it. I have impregnated you with demon spawn. Wait until they're born, then the real fun begins. I was smiling, thinking of all the grief I had put my parents through. Those two frightened me, Mike. I think I know who you're talking about. I ran across them myself. I got down low, which is difficult for me, but not nearly as hard as getting back up. They stopped almost directly across from me. Then I watched as they began to smell the air. The one closer to me allowed just his nose to expand out so we could get a better sample of air. I think they would have found me, too, if I hadn't done a cloaking spell. They knew I was out there. They just couldn't find me. And if they were hunting me specifically, they showed no fear of making that encounter. They weren't lichened, though. Of that, I'm sure. No, they weren't. As far as I can tell, Lunos is not working with any of the clans. He has struck some sort of devil's bargain with people. His army are willing subjects. That cannot be, Aziel looked alarmed. Is it so hard to believe? He offers them an opportunity to escape the difficulties and doldrums of peasant life, to travel the country and experience power and plunder whatever they encounter. How many would have willingly done so in our time? Shit, how many did? So you knew there were werewolves afoot, but you couldn't possibly have known there was an invasion. I followed them. Wait, you followed them? The hunted became the hunter, in your condition. I am hardly a delicate flower, Talbot. Shh, quiet, woman, I'm being macho right now. God, I've missed you. She grabbed my shirt and pulled me in tight. We kissed and then leaned our foreheads against each other for a while. The contact? Very welcome. But I pulled back when she started her story again. I followed them for almost 2 days, and I swear they knew I was doing it, yet they never made a suspicious move against me. Probably figured if they couldn't get you on their own, the plan was to get you into a war where you would be vulnerable. Is Lunos that insane? He would openly threaten me. Lunos believes himself better than every creature that inhabits this planet, though I think I rattled his giant melon a bit when I showed up at Talbotton. He attacked there. He did, though I think it was more of a test. If he could have taken the fort with minimal casualties, he would have. He'd not been expecting the resistance he'd encountered, or me, for that matter, and he left nearly as quickly as he'd come. Dinarth. Them he completely avoided. He made a beeline for Robert's land. It makes sense in terms of accessibility and defenses. Partly. When I came across the whole of them, it didn't take much to reason out where they were headed. I wanted to get close, but, she pointed to her belly, this prevented any sort of stealth. Maybe you should have laid off the bonbons. You're making me regret this reunion already. Probably a record you lasted this long. Anyway, Michael, if you would let me continue. The floor is yours. The whole bed is yours. Hell, the rack of lamb outside is yours. She pressed her finger against my lips. Shh. Don't make me wish I'd got together with the pots and pans merchant out of Fort Lufkin. I knew these werewolves were different. They looked well-fed, well-rested, and in good spirits. No one was guarding them. They weren't locked up, and they were mostly in human form. Those that weren't seemed to be much more concerned with what was out there waiting for them than what was going on with the camp. I had thought perhaps an enchantment, though I could detect nothing. I didn't see Lunos, and there was nothing more I could do there. That was when I went to Robert's land to warn them. How'd that go? Not everyone is as abrasive as you, Michael, though I do not think they would have listened to me in any case had numerous inhabitants not already had very recent sightings. I've got to think they must have also heard things about the other towns in battle, right? They'd heard. They just chose to ignore it, or believe the tales to be exaggerated. Nobody wants to think that war can be brought to their doorstep. Robert's Land's isolation has led to a fair amount of their prosperity. Yeah, they basically welcomed me with open arms the last time I was here. I think that had more to do with the guest than the host. I can see grazing constantly at the all-you-can-eat buffet has made you funny. I can't imagine that Tracy put up with this when she was pregnant. I waited until she couldn't catch me, and I made sure to sleep in a different room every night. I was told you had Augie, but I haven't seen him. I was concerned, but she didn't look overly worried, and that put me at ease. This attack was not just about gaining a victory at all costs. Lunos was looking for something or someone when he came here. Hundreds of werewolves strode into town like that was the most normal thing in the world. Are you shitting me? He just walked in like they were on parade or something? I thought you said you warned them. I did. I don't know what you think I could have accomplished, though. There's not much in the way of weaponry here. We did the next best thing. We evacuated. By the time Lunos arrived, most of the town was gone. That prick sheriff stay behind? Blaine, he is far from a prick. Have you really had a run-in with the only authority figure within 1,000 square miles? I nodded. Of course you did. It is as if you seek them out, not the other way around. We're not getting any closer to the part about my dog. Lunos asked about all the male children under the age of 7. Pretty specific. That's what I thought, and I asked him as much. Wait, you didn't clear out with the rest of the refugees? Sort of. I was safe. He said he would spare the town and its inhabitants if we would but bring him the children. Now, I get that Lycan don't think like us, but how could he have ever thought those terms would be agreed to? I don't think he did. So he threw out the carrot, knowing full well he was going to need the rod. That's our Lunos. Something niggled at the back of my mind, though I knew not what it was. At that point, it could have been a brain aneurysm. It wasn't until I actually laid eyes on all the little kids that a puny nugget of missing information dislodged from a darkened area within my brain and broke free into the light. He tore that sheriff apart as a display of his power. Then he lit the town on fire, or at least as much as he thought prudent, before he began his hunt for us. The thing is, I think he already knew where we were. It was all theatrics. He wanted to put on a show. This was when the doomed battle inside the town started. It gave me enough time to leave and help the refugees. Yeah, saw the results of that. Can you imagine if all of Xavier's littermates had survived, each one worse than the next? We set up camp along the banks of the lake. I'd hoped it was far enough away that he would not pursue. It was the only place that was even remotely defendable. We would not have lasted more than another hour had you not arrived when you did. Well, I also have a flair for the dramatic, I suppose. I flipped my hand back in a theatrical gesture. I have not seen many children here. There's an island in the middle of this lake. We had just got them all ashore there and were getting ready to move the rest of the populace out there. Never got the chance. You had the supplies for an extended siege. Azeel looked at me with a what-do-you-think expression. We were on the run with minimal notification. I had taken a few pages out of the Michael Talbot playbook. You did all right for yourself. I kissed her forehead. She'd recklessly endangered herself and the babies, but I was just thankful she was all right. We would have died here if not for you. She closed her eyes. She was exhausted. I sat there another 20 minutes before Bailey poked her head in. Are you done? Am I done what? Doing what most couples do upon a long absence and subsequent reunion. Sex, you mean? You want to know if we just finished having sex? You didn't know if we were or not, yet you did not knock. I have seen your lily-colored buttocks before. That's not the point. Come. I think there was someone you were going to want to see on your world reunion tour. Think I should get some t-shirts printed up? I'm hesitant to leave her alone. She seems so vulnerable like this. I have 2 guards right outside this flap and 1 behind. She will be fine for a few minutes. You have already driven her into a deep slumber with your ramblings. Perhaps you should let her get some rest. You know, I threw BT out of my brother's home when he got too mouthy. As if you could have. The woman of my age were much more demure. You forget I read about Tracy. She helped me out of the tent and walked me down to the water's edge. I saw small rowboats, a dozen at least, making their way to us. Figured this was the kids coming back. Didn't think much about it until I saw a very large dog standing on the bow of one of the lead boats. There was not a flicker of doubt in me about who that dog was. His bark echoed off the water, and then he jumped in. I began to wade out after him. I was in up over my head by the time we met up. I wasn't in danger so much from the deep water as I was by the constant tongue-bathing from Augie and the waves from his frantic paddling. I could hardly get a breath in, lest I ran the risk of swallowing his tongue or the lake water. He finally rested his large paws on my shoulders and enjoyed the ride as I paddled us both back into the shallows. "Obtain an enclosed location from which you can show your fondness in private," Matthew said from the shore. "It's get a room," I told him. "Oh, that does make more sense." "It is good to see you, Augie," Matthew said, patting the large dog's back. Augie made sure to do a thorough shakedown, soaking Matthew and anybody inside the area code with a pelting of water. Gotta admit, it was nice to see my pup. With him, I didn't have to explain why I'd gone, where I'd been, or how I'd come back. He was living for the moment, and right then, we were together. That was all that mattered. He whined in delight and would occasionally roll onto his back for a good tummy rub where he would push at my arms with his paws, sometimes biting at my hands when I wasn't administering enough affection to him. "I've been with less clingy women," I told him. He barked his disdain back. So lost was I in the reunion with Augie, I nearly missed what was all around me. Kids. Dozens and dozens of little kids. It was a tow-headed little cherub that rattled some old memory loose within me, the golden ringlets that encircled his head a part of the memory. I recognized him. I just couldn't figure out why. I avoided most kids like I avoided most teenage girls. They were a foreign species that basically scared the bejesus out of me. It might have been the dour-faced woman claiming to be the boy's mother that broke the memory free from its vine and allowed me to remember. The boy had been on his porch back when Tommy was first getting me involved in this whole lichen shit fest. He'd waved, maybe, and Tommy had said, "What exactly? That kid will be important someday. Was that it?" And what did he know or suspect back then? Was it possible this was the very child Lunos was looking for? Dour Face picked up her son. She was looking right at me. "I recognize you. You stay away from my son." She spat the words with such vehemence I was afraid that I had somehow ended up on the sex offender registry. Then I got it. "You know something." I said the words not even knowing what I meant. She backed up. "When Lunos came here looking for kids, you knew exactly what kid he was looking for." I was moving closer, she was moving farther away. "Step away, mister." A gangly man stepped between me and the woman. If this was the father, I would have to rethink everything I knew about the commingling of genetics and just how lucky the boy was that he had been spared all of his parents' DNA. "What's your name, son?" I completely ignored the man. The boy did not sense the tension flowing freely from his parents at the moment. "Don't you answer him, hon," Dourface Deb said. "Gabriel," the boy said, his face lighting up as he spoke. Why wouldn't it be the angel of revelation? Gangly man had moved closer. His breath reeked of rotten fish and turnips, and I'm not even sure what turnips smell like, but I immediately disliked them anyway. He pressed the steel of a small knife into my side, right between my fourth and fifth rib. He was not unfamiliar with the best way to kill a man. "You leave us alone," the man hissed. "I have been through entirely. entirely too much shit in this life to be done in by a fish-boning blade held by some yokel. You wouldn't be the first man I killed. I reckon you won't be the last. A realization hit me. That's how you got the boy, isn't it? I mean, otherwise, you actually had to mate with that female. I can't imagine any penis, even one as shriveled up and unwanted as yours, being able to stomach that kind of ride. Am I right? I was pissing him off, and I was all right with that. I had backed up. Augie charged and bit deeply into the man's leg. He turned his attention to the large dog, only to end up with a massive fist to the side of his head as Mathieu punched him square in the temple, dropping him to the ground. Augie released the man's leg once he knew the assailant was unconscious. I bent down and pried the knife from his clenched fingers. You were going to stab me with a rusty blade? Fuck you, man. I gave him a short stroke kick to the side. Not hard enough to break ribs, but enough he'd be sore for a couple of days. By now, we had a much larger audience than I'd intended. He had it coming. He was talking on a cell phone during the movie, crinkling candy wrappers. What did you expect me to do? I asked those that were watching. We were on a precarious precipice. I had a feeling no one was a huge fan of Gangly Man, but he was a local, and that carried a certain weight within a closed community like this. An outsider taking it to one of their own was frowned upon. Bailey showed up with 12 or so soldiers. The disbursement happened almost immediately. How can you possibly turn allies so quickly against you? She asked, directing a couple of her men to help a groggy Gangly up and over to a log seat where he could come to. He's lucky he's not dead. He stuck a damn knife in my side. The question begs, why? You can't honestly be on his side. I never said that, Michael. I am merely wondering why a man that obviously looks as if he works for a living would want to bleed you out. It's the kid, I said, as I pointed to dour-faced Debbie and Gabriel. That kid, specifically, is the one Lunos is looking for. You're sure of that? She asked. Even if I wasn't convinced, it was Tommy that originally pointed him out to me. That's as big a vote of confidence as I need. Bailey ordered a detail to stay with the small family. Dourface looked like she was ready to spit venom, though she did keep her mouth shut. Gabriel, on the other hand, seemed to love the added attention. I hate to do it, but we're going to need a zeal out here to confirm, I said. She has just fought a battle and is about ready to give birth. I think she should be allowed some rest, Bailey said. Nah, we'll have her waddle out here. She does a little voodoo confirmation, and then she can waddle back to bed, I said. You are indeed brave, as long as you believe that she is away from you and a slumber, Mathieu said. Is that not the case anymore? I asked, not daring to turn back around and check. Oh, believe you me, I had to waddle over here. I'm just not sure if it was wise of you to point that out, Azeel said. Mike, I take one small nap and you start an incident. I found the kid Lunos was looking for, I told her, happy to note we'd already moved past emphasizing the waddle comment. Just like that. I had help from Tommy, I told her. She was already moving closer to the boy. Dourface was doing all in her power to shield the boy. He was having none of it. You're the witch, he said, not a hint of concern or fear in his voice. My name is Gabriel. That's a beautiful name, Azeel said, as she laboriously stooped to be at his level. The boy, is he your son? She looked up to Dourface. Obviously, she'd made the same connection I had. The woman's lips pursed, giving her already unfortunate countenance a severely pinched look. My good-for-nothing brothers, she said. He stuck us with him almost 5 years ago, and I haven't seen him since. Not a day goes by, I'm sure the boy doesn't appreciate the fact he's with you, I said sarcastically. Mike, do you mind? Azeel asked. I don't, not really, I told her. Honesty is always the best policy. Unless, I mean, you're dealing with women, then lying to cover your ass is the best assumed stance. You're dealing with a woman, she sighed. I ain't too particularly bright, I told her. Could you please come over here? I don't want him anywhere near my nephew, Dourface yelled.
It's all right, the boy said.
Dourface calmed down immediately when he laid a hand on her leg. I might not be overly bright, like I said, but I know magic when I see it. That, or he just shot her up with a heavy dose of morphine. I was in for the latter, not so much the former. I had to step over Gangly's outstretched feet to get to the boy. I got down next to Azeel.
Don't be scared, he told me.
I was going to say the same thing to you, I told him. He put his small hand out.
I don't think you're going to like this.
He was peering into my eyes. I grabbed his hand. I have no idea what the fuck I was thinking or why I did it. A surge of electricity made my entire body rigid as if I'd just shoved a fork into a 220-volt outlet. I was pretty sure I'd bit straight through my tongue and the pink chunk of flesh would be flopping around on the ground. I had the distinct impression I was being zipped through a tunnel of indeterminable length, though I was in another location in under a fraction of a second. Netherworld, underworld, alternate world, don't know, don't care, ripped my hand free from him long before I could once again get stuck in a place with limited options for retrieval. I sat back hard, luckily on top of Gangly, who let out a largely exaggerated sigh as I forced the air from him. Gabriel thought that was one of the funniest things he had ever seen. His childish laughter filled my ears. As scared as I had been a millisecond before, I was instantly calmed.
What the fuck just happened?
You tell me, Azeel asked, wondering.
You don't know. Touch his hand. Scratch that. Don't.
I put my hand out. Do not touch his hand. Nobody should touch his hand. It was then that she showed me that she'd had his other hand in hers the entire time.
You're kidding, right?
She shook her head. You didn't go for a ride on the Spiritual Express. She shook her head. I looked from her to him.
Do you know where we went? I asked him.
You pierced the veil, Gabriel said. I stayed here and held the pretty lady's hand.
I didn't know whether to approach him or go running off into the woods.
What does that mean, pierced the veil?
So many words hidden by so very little.
The boy sounded wise by decades beyond his physical age. Calling him an old soul would not even begin to convey what I sensed from him.
Are you of the earth? Azeel asked.
I don't know. Part of me, at least, is a 6-year-old boy. I'm officially freaking out right now. So the kid is a portal of some kind. Is that a safe assumption? Gabriel nodded. Okay. So, how did Lunos hear about this? And why would he want you? And, more importantly, why was I the only one that went for a ride? Gabriel shrugged. For the first time since this little strange occurrence started, he very much looked like a 6-year-old child. I had a feeling I was closer to 6 years old than whoever was driving his ship. I couldn't help but feel bad for the kid. I was under the assumption he was an innocent caught up in much bigger events. Or what the hell do I know? Maybe he'd been planted here in this most benign of disguises and was actually a monster of unimaginable might that was going to tear down the very fabric of our reality, then piss on us. That this was actually a possibility did not sit well within me, kind of like I'd eaten an okra and pate glazed Pop-Tart. Yeah, that would sit like a stone in my gut. Shit, now I have an upset stomach. Dourface was moving closer. Her fist was opening and closing. I'm thinking she was going to cold cock me and see how far she could get before someone stopped her. Listen, woman, if you hit me, I will hit you back. We are not trying to hurt your charge. I couldn't bring myself to call him her nephew. I just didn't want to saddle the poor kid with that. There is a very dangerous, very smart lichen out there who is extremely interested in Gabriel, and until we can figure out why, he and you are in grave danger, and you and Gangly over there even more so because he cares not for neither of you. You're just an unpleasant impediment. I figure he'll just feed you both to his werewolves and be done with it.
Mike, Azeel berated. What? It's the truth. Yes, perhaps it is, but there is no need to be so blunt.
Oh, yeah? It wasn't you she was planning on swinging those ham-sized fists at?
Put the damn things away, I threatened her.
What can he hope to gain by traveling to other realms? Mathieu asked, studying the boy.
Was I physically gone?
What?
Mathieu asked.
When I touched him, did I disappear?
No, not physically, but your eyes had immediately closed and you were unresponsive.
Do you know what happens, Gabriel?
I'm hungry, he shrugged.
Azeel, I think it's obvious what needs to be done, I told her.
Oh, it is it? Why don't you tell me? Because even though it is so obvious, I have no idea what you're talking about.
We need to get this kid to a secure location, and then I need to see where this leads.
Did you not, just less than 5 minutes ago, say that you were not ever going to do that again?
Azeel's hands were on her hips.
Yeah, but I thought I had disappeared.
If that wasn't the case, then we need to figure out what Lunos needs him for.
There are other deaths besides physical, Azeel warned.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's not a problem for him, Mathieu said.
Gee, thanks, buddy, I answered, like I wasn't already treading on rough waters.
Lana had come over to our small group.
My scouts tell me that we are completely encircled by werewolves.
It was close to 200 miles to Dinarth, and that was the only secure location I could think we could get to. Lana, we have to get back to your home.
And then what? She asked. Michael, we cannot handle this many refugees, and they certainly won't fit inside our walls.
You're starting to sound like your father, I told her.
I might as well have told a woman I was arguing with to relax. That's how pissed off she looked at me right then.
She's right, Azeel said. There are too many. We'd never be able to keep them safe for the journey. We can't stay here and fight.
There's another option. Mathieu was looking over to the island. They'll starve, Lana said.
No, they won't. I could see where Mathieu was going with this. Lunos only wants the boy. The rest of the inhabitants go and hide out on the island for a day, and we take Gabriel here and hightail it for Dinarth.
Can we be sure Lunos will follow? Azeel asked.
If he doesn't, we have condemned these people.
The only alternative is to stand and fight. Honestly, I'm not sure how much of a chance we have here, this far removed from resupply, I said.
Listen, I'm only throwing in my 2 cents. If anyone has a better idea, by all means, I gestured with my hand.
There was silence.
We indeed must be in trouble if Michael's idea is the best one that we have, Mathieu said.
Shit, buddy, don't hold back on my account, I told him.
I feel like I must owe you money or something, getting a very passive-aggressive vibe here.
He hugged me and smiled.
Not at all. It is just very good to see you again. I have not had a friend I can jest with.
Lucky me, I told him.
Gabriel, you up for some horseback riding?
On one of those?
He was looking at the enormous creatures.
Yeah.
Don't worry, it's not as scary as it looks. I hoped he couldn't see the lie as I spoke it.
I am not afraid. I've always wanted to ride one.
We have to bring him to Dinarth, I told Dourface.
Then go, she said.
Don't you want to come?
I had a confused look on my face.
He's been nothing but a burden since the day he came to my house.
Gabriel was not paying her any attention, as she basically said she didn't love him and never had and would be glad to be rid of him.
I expect it wasn't the first time she'd said the words. Even so, I wanted to break her fucking jaw to make sure the next time she said any words it would hurt like hell.
The citizens of Robertsland weren't quite as ready to let us go on our merry little way as Dour and Gangly. We'd be taking away a very large part of their defense. It was all we could do to convince them that we would also be taking away the very reason they were being attacked. But that wasn't entirely true, and I have to think that at least part of my lie was exposed to the harsh, bright sunlight where it sat out in the open in all its naked glory. Were we condemning these people?
Our only chance, and I meant theirs as well, was speed.
We needed to get the hell out of here before Lunos attacked again. Odds were he was more inclined to pursue, But if he wasn't? And that was the question everything hinged on. The half-vamp, the supposedly evil part of me, had been pushed out. But I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a significant portion of me that considered driving a knife into Gabriel's skull might be the best thing we could do. So how much wickedness must I have housed within me, or still did? Sick. I know it. And that's why I didn't voice it. Here was Lunos, already on the precipice of taking over the entire eastern part of the United States, and still he felt the need to find this veil-piercer for some as-of-yet unseen advantage. If this kid was so important, could we somehow use him for our own devices, or was he just an instrument for destruction, like the living embodiment of a nuclear device? Sure, we'd rather have that power than let our enemies have it, but in the end, it just wiped everything in its path out. Good, bad, indifferent, all just gone. That was the problem inherent in weapons of mass destruction. Gabriel was either the savior or the destroyer. It would be infinitely easier if he were wrapped in the guise of Dour Face. Her I'd off just for the fun of it. Lana the Ninja was easily the best rider among us, her horse the fastest, and arguably she was the best warrior on this endeavor. It made sense that Gabriel rode with her. We'd fixed the saddle so that he was strapped in. In the event we had trouble, her defense was to run, and the rest of us would basically become a giant speed bump for Lunas's army. Now we were left wondering if he was even going to let us leave. Odds were he'd seen the townsfolk head back to the island. We'd done our best to disguise Gabriel as a bedroll slash backpack. He should pass as luggage from a distance. We had hoped that Lunos was assuming we hadn't figured out who the one he sought was, and that we, having done the job we'd set out to do, were leaving. Every hour he spent waiting out the people on the island was more time we had to decamp unhindered. Our column was on the move, although we looked more like rush hour traffic in downtown Tokyo with how densely packed we were. Talbotans made up the entire outer perimeter. We had the Dinarthians completely encased, and Lana was almost dead center. She was pretty much invisible to prying eyes. Now, if her luggage would only stop adjusting itself periodically, we'd be fine. I had hopes we were going to get away. Slim hopes, sure. But hopes nonetheless. "Leaving so soon, Michael!" Damn it! This came from the woods. Words of challenge directly from Lunos's snout. "Going to meet up with the rest of the reinforcements," I said completely unconvincingly. "I have werewolves watching Talbotan and Denarth. There are no others coming." If he was bluffing, like I was, he sounded way more sure of himself. Fuck it, we had nothing to lose. Fine, Lunos, you apparently know everything. Come and attack. I have no desire to banter with you. I really just want to massacre your spawn, and when they're all used up and ready to run, I'm going to come for you. I killed your psychotic brother. It is apparently my lot in life to end your entire line. Then, and only then will I be free from wandering this earth. That you know to be true. I was sent back, Lunos, specifically to kill you. Even now, that's why you took off when we came to Robert's Land's defense. That's why you don't attack us right now. You're scared. And you should be. You've seen my resolve. You're my fucking mission, you lucky bastard. What chance do you believe yourself to have when the heavens have aligned themselves against you? And I started laughing. At first, it was just a way to punctuate what I had said. But the more I did it, the more it took on a life of its own. It became this sort of maniacal braying that is really kind of tough to be overly proud of, even though it felt good just to let go of myself. And even if it ended in a coughing fit. And maybe if my complete abandon put a sliver of doubt in Lunos's mind, it was well worth the undignified display. Werewolves began to materialize from the woods, though they did not attack. The horses were none too thrilled. Well, neither were we. Bailey repeatedly told her men not to fire. They stayed a good 20 feet away. It was clear they were looking for something, or more likely someone. I hoped Azeel's magic was enough to keep Gabriel off their radar. Lunos had already proved very adept at seeing past her spells. I could only hope she had upped her game, though I wasn't going to say anything. Between the two, it would be better for me if Lunos found what he was looking for and we had to fight our way out of this particular predicament. For over 3 miles, they kept pace, encircling our entire troop. I expected them at any time to lunge in after us, though that never happened. After 5 miles, the scouts Lana had sent out reported back that we were no longer being followed. It was another 5 before we felt safe enough to let Gabriel poke his head out. There was not a man or woman among us that was not worn out, yet we pushed on long into the night. Sooner or later, Lunos would realize that what he was looking for was no longer back there, because somehow he had known it was there to begin with. As if just having this thought opened up the topic, Azeel began to speak. She looked so uncomfortable atop that horse. I wanted to find her a pillow-top mattress she could lie down on. "Stop looking at me that way. I'm not going to break," she said. "I've been thinking on Lunos." "Yeah, he seems to be pretty popular right now." "I do not believe him to have mystical powers beyond what is normal for their kind. There is someone among his group that is a witch, or more likely just has a great raw talent." I wisely said nothing at first, but we all know how long I can go with that. Am I detecting a little professional jealousy going on here? I mean, you go to the finest witchcraft university, rule half the world, win the hearts and minds of the masses, and then this uppity street magician comes along and just starts crinkling her nose and changing your people into mice.
Crinkling her nose?
Oh, don't tell me you don't know Bewitched. Nothing. Come on, Samantha Stevens and Dora, Darren the Hapless Mortal.
Really?
Fine, forget it. Last time I bring up universal cultural references with you. This is serious, Michael. They may have someone of great power. I am more concerned with what they are capable of doing than getting an idiotic husband into trouble with his workplace boss.
Aha! So you do know the show!
Not the point. But she was smiling, and that made her absolutely glow. Pregnancy looks good on you, I told her. I am so sorry I wasn't here for most of it. Get that look out of your eyes. That's why I'm in this spot to begin with. I'm just happy you're here now. I thought I'd lost you forever.
I get that a lot.
At any point in your life, Michael, have you been serious for more than 5 minutes together?
There was that one time in jail when Bubba wanted to get to know me better. I was all business then. When a 400-pound man says he has a crush on you, those are the types of things you need to take seriously.
Michael.
He was holding 4 bars of soap, Azeel. I had my chastity to think about.
Uh-oh. Her free hand dropped to her belly, and she leaned back. Sweat immediately broke out on her forehead.
Shoot me, but the first thing out of my mouth was, "Bad burrito."
"Baby, you ass," was the reply.
Please tell me that it was just an extra big kick, like he was stretching his legs or something.
She didn't mince her words.
Help me down. This is happening right now.
It can't. There are no bars nearby.
I looked around in a panic.
Yep, still in the middle of nowhere.
Help me down, you big jerk.
Azeel, I'm sorry. I know that you're uncomfortable, but Lana wants us to keep moving, Matthew said as he came up on us.
That's what I'm saying. I had a hysterical lilt to my voice. I told her she can't have the babies here.
Babies?
Now.
He suddenly got as pale as I was. My body was on autopilot, thankfully, as it helped Azeel down off her horse. I let my limbs perform, even though my mind was racing with all the possible things that could go wrong with having a birth in the wild, so to speak.
if I just stayed dead just a little longer. Yep, I really said that out loud. Luckily, Azeel was in the midst of some deep, heavy breathing. Women, the much stronger of the species, began to appear almost magically. Blankets were being laid down, water was set for boiling. She was receiving adequate care. Now, if only she would release her death grip from my hand, I could get the fuck out of here and find a remote town to hide in. "I'm never letting you go again," she said as she rearranged the bones in my hand. "Help me, man," I mouthed to Matthew, who was standing on the peripheries, a worried expression on his face. He was working his bottom lip by biting at it and pulling on it with his left hand. At least he had the smarts to find something else to do, or look like he had. "Asshat," I told his retreating form. Azeel screamed out. Sounded like Latin, something along the lines of fatibor enim animam. Found out afterwards it meant that she was going to own my soul for doing this to her. Fitting and relevant, but it kind of sucked in one aspect because I just got the damn thing back. Everything was going all right. At first, the women were moving about almost in a choreographed way as they alternated between wiping her brow and getting Azeel into a comfortable position. Then things got tense real fast. I was up by Azeel's head where I figured it was marginally safer. "Yeah, I know childbirth is a very natural, very beautiful affair. Just that, well, some beautiful natural things are still better left to the imagination. Now, I used to be a huge fan of turkey deli meat. Well, back in the day, I was up late one night, couldn't sleep, probably worried about something real important, like the car needed a muffler and we couldn't afford it. Anyway, I start watching this stupid show called Food Secrets, and they're going into detail about how my favorite sandwich meat was made. I was grossed the fuck out watching them do it. A food I'd loved since I was a kid was ruined forever. It was like this jellied paste that they squished into the familiar shrink-wrapped turkey you saw at the store, like it was barely even food. Women having babies is the same thing. I had a general idea how it all went down, enough to be functionally literate about it. There was really no need for me to witness every little specific. Anyway, it's not like I could help. All was going as well as could be expected. I was actively ignoring everything that was going on around me. Azeel was yelling out a string of obscenities in Latin, probably casting spells around the entire globe as she did so. Some poor sheep farmer in China had just grown donkey ears. If I hadn't been surrounded by women, I would have given my junk a once-over just to make sure she hadn't cursed it into oblivion. Listen, you'd feel the same way if you were dating one of the most powerful women on the planet. The bones in my hand were constantly shifting, like sand in the Sahara. And then they weren't. Things changed just that fast. Her screams stopped, her grip loosened, and before I could be ushered away, I saw blood, more than seemed reasonable given the circumstances. Her face was rapidly fading to the color of grade school paste. She was dying. I'd come back just in time to watch her die. Something inside of me began to bend, then break. My mind overlaid the image of another that I loved dying while giving birth. They were both so pale, lips of purple, trembling as their life's fluid leaked out. I knew enough about myself to realize I was seeing something that had happened or would still happen in another of my lifelines, but it was so real. It was right in front of me. My heart was hollowed out as I watched that other woman die. That I loved her was without question. Feelings of despair washed over me with enough force to push me to the earth. Tears leaped from my eyes as terror cascaded upon me. "She's dying," I wailed. Matthew was by my side, his hand upon my hunched, heaving shoulder. "I don't even know her name, Matthew, but I can barely breathe." I think he understood that as something to do with my grief, for he said nothing.
The duality of the images began to blur further before finally the unknown young mother began to fade as life left her. The sound of a baby's cry broke through the fog I found myself mired in. This followed almost immediately by another. "She yet lives, Michael." Matthew's words were lined in hope. I could make out nothing clearly through the curtain of tears that blinded me. I was pulled, or maybe led, back over to Azeel. She had two small bundles wrapped up, and they slept peacefully on her chest. She looked to me, a tired smile spread across her features. "I'm sorry you had to see that," she said, and no part of me thought she was referring to the childbearing. She'd somehow known about the vision. "It's all right, Michael. I'm alive and well. Sore, perhaps, but well." She reached up and wiped a tear away from my cheek. What happened?" I asked as I kissed her forehead. "The many lives you lead sometimes bleed over. Sorry, that was a poor choice of words." "Have you met your children?" she smiled. "A boy and a girl." They were so small, not much bigger than a deflated football. One had a shock of red hair, the other a tuft of black. "Neither one looks like me," I told her. "That's a good thing." It was Matthew beaming behind me. "I am an uncle," he told all around us. If I could have built a fort right at that moment, surrounded us all, kept us safe from every evil, every enemy that would do us harm, I would have done so there and then and never ventured from it for any earthly reason. If only I could have. "Chancellor, you wanted me to tell you when I heard from the forward scouts," the leader of the guards said. Lana was next to Matthew, leaning into him. "What news do you have?" she asked, becoming all business again. "That's the thing, Chancellor. We have not heard from them." That was cause for alarm. I'm pretty sure Dinarth citizens were direct descendants from Germany. They believed wholeheartedly in schedules and keeping them. If they missed a check-in, there was a reason. "None of them," she asked. "None of the six have reported," he told her. "Azeel, are you able to—" "She cannot." It was one of the women that had been overseeing the births. "Ride?" Lana finished. "We will set up a defensive perimeter," Bailey said. "You will do no such thing," Azeel said. I know she was trying to put some force behind the words, but they did not come out much above a whisper. "Getting Gabriel to safety is of the utmost concern. I have ways of protecting myself. I am not quite as vulnerable as I look." "You look pretty vulnerable," I told her honestly. "Shut up, sweetheart," she said tenderly. "Lana, Bailey, you must get out of here now. We will be all right." I began to stand. "Well, good luck, Azeel. I'll wait for you at Dinarth." Lana looked shocked. Bailey could only shake her head at my poor attempt at humor, which she caught on to immediately. Lana, I had completely duped. "Tell her you're kidding," Azeel said. "What are you talking about?" I feigned. "Take the children. We need to get off the path." I reached down and tenderly took the small bundles. "They will not break, Michael." My heart pooled into a puddle as I made my first contact with them. "My life for yours, always," I told them as I kissed their foreheads. Matthew helped Azeel shakily get to her feet. "The blankets must go," Azeel told the midwife. "Horses?" Bailey asked. Azeel shook her head curtly. "I cannot hide them." "We're going to do that hiding out in plain sight shit?" I asked. She nodded. "I hate that crap. You know that, right?" "It is out of necessity." I followed close behind her as Matthew more carried rather than escorted her off the path and about 50 feet into the woods. "Do you wish me to stay?" he asked. "It will be all I can do to mask myself, the children, and Michael. But thank you, Matthew." She touched his arm as he helped her to sit with her back against a large oak. "I don't want you to overburden yourself," I told her. "You're staying," she warned me. The joke would go no further.
"Michael, how can you expect me to leave you?" Mathieu damn near pleaded. "Do not doubt in Azeel's powers, my friend. Go with Lana. Get your ass back to Dinarth. Please do not stick around. I could not take it if something happened to you."
"You mean my beer recipe?"
"Let's not make this awkward," I told him.
"You're a sphincter, Michael Talbot."
"It's asshole, not sphincter."
"Damn it, that sounds so much worse. Now I have that to think about all day."
He hugged me tight. "Do not die on me again, my friend."
"I'll do my best," I told him as I hugged him back.
"Mathieu, we need to go," Lana was calling from the edge of the woods.
"I will see you again," Bailey said as she came up next to me.
"At some point we will," I told her truthfully. "I had my soul. If not on this plane, then we'd meet on another. And again, I was okay with that."
I hugged her as well. She pulled a reluctant Mathieu with her as they went to their horses.
"Good luck," Lana shouted. And within 5 minutes, the entire column was out of sight. Another 5 and they were out of earshot. The woods got pretty quiet, pretty fast. Well, I mean, except for the normal sounds, devoid of man. Crickets, birds, laborious squirrels, the occasional caw of a distant crow. It was all there, and that was good. The more of those sounds, the less of the approaching enemy. I didn't stray far from Azeel, just enough to scope things out. She and the babies were resting comfortably, and I didn't want to throw a wrench in the works. I mean, it was already a foregone conclusion that one or another of the babies would cry out at the most inopportune of times. I could only hope Azeel had a nullifying spell for that. It was an all-encompassing quiet, an unnatural silence, that gave me the first indication all was not right with the world. It's one of those things you don't immediately pick up on. Then your body begins to give you clues that your mind was too busy to pick up on. There's the cold finger up the spine, the tiny vibrations of hair standing on the back of your neck, heartbeat acceleration, and even the butterfly movement in your stomach. If I'd taken a second or two longer to pay closer attention to what was happening inside of me, I wouldn't have nearly been spotted as that first werewolf came into view. I'd almost blown the whole cover. Azeel was frantically motioning to me to come over to her. God, she looked so tired. For the first time this day, I was absolutely petrified. She was most certainly not going to be able to get up and fight, and sure, she had 2 Talbots with her, but they weren't quite at the ready just yet. I had a rifle, 4 full magazines, a sword, and my axe. It would not be enough if I had to use them. You are going to need to stay still. This is more of a camouflage than an invisibility. It won't do if the trunk of the tree is moving.
What about the scent? We're dealing with something that is part dog.
I have that covered, she whispered. Now, if you could just go against your very nature and be quiet as well, we might just make it through the day.
I watched her do some incantations and mess around with some herbs. She could have been reconstructing Colonel Sanders' secret recipe, she had so many of them. I thought we would be better served if I kept an eye out on the enemy in case her methods didn't work. 3 werewolves passed by at a trot. None of them spared even the remotest glance in our direction. So far, so good, though I was convinced they were entirely too focused on the main column to give any sort of second glance around them. It was the next 2 humans that began to send some alarm bells off in my head. It was the same 2 creepy fuckers I had encountered back by Dinarth. They were important puzzle pieces for Lunos, and if there wasn't so much on the line at the moment, I would have risked offing them and putting my fist in Lunos's plans. The one on the left stopped, roughly where Azeel had given birth. He seemed mighty curious. The other one, with the paler eyes, came over to see what his compatriot was looking at. His eyes swept over the entire area, but there was nothing overtly suspicious in his behavior, and before long they also left. There was something more to those 2 than met the eye, and I was going to make it a personal quest to figure out what it was. Then came the people.
They were mostly serious, but there were more than a few that were talking animatedly, maybe even joking with the person they were walking next to. None of them seemed all that distressed about what was happening. They were soldiers, and not the reluctant sort. I couldn't even begin to figure out why they were fighting with Lunos against their own kind. I guess, in reality, it really didn't matter who you were fighting for, as opposed to what you were fighting for. And in this particular instance, they thought they were fighting to improve their own lot in life. Whatever the case, they were the enemy, though they did not look like it. They were moving at a brisk pace. Forced march would be a good description. Whatever you wanted to call it, it didn't look too taxing on them. None of them so much as glanced at our impromptu birthing station, or more importantly, our current location. A couple of times a few people left the ranks to take care of some baser needs, but none came in as far as we were. It got dicey only once, when one of the women had to take a very unladylike shit. She'd come about halfway, wanting to get away from the eyes of her comrades, but she was directly in my line of sight. Yeah, I got to watch a woman take a 5-pound brown. Have to admit it wasn't the highlight of my day. I wasn't completely sure, and no time soon was I going to check it out, but I was very much under the belief that the leaves she used to clean herself with were rubbing up next to a poisoned sumac. Serves you right, I hissed. You are going to be one miserable SOB soon enough. Azeel punched my thigh. I got the hint. She quickly finished up and returned to the troop, vigorously wiping her hands on some poor, unsuspecting slob who probably thought she was flirting with him. I wonder if that'd be considered an STD. I'd meant to think it. Instead, it came out verbally. You just can't shut up, can you? Azeel whispered. I shrugged, but did not turn to look at what I am sure was a stern look. I did, however, shut my trap when Lunos came into view. He was about 3/4 back and had 4 very large men surrounding him, along with the weirdest thing I'd seen all day. A very tall, gaunt man, in garb that was reminiscent of a 1970s prom, an exceedingly green, crushed velvet tuxedo replete with tails, cane, and a top hat. Unlike a pimply-faced teen who was actually hoping to lose his virginity card that night, this man looked ancient. Like maybe he had actually worn the hideous suit during that aforementioned time. Wrinkles so deep they had individual canyon names lined his face. His hands so dark from liver spots, I'd wrongly thought he was wearing gloves. If I had to pick a number, I'd peg him as 110, were he mortal. Though he strode easily enough, and his back did not have the slightest curve from the accumulation of years. Here was someone, or something, that was definitely more than was presented visually. There was a gasp from Azeel that clued me into all I needed to know. The kicker was when he stopped abruptly. Yeah, you don't need to be a mind reader to figure out exactly where. His caterpillar-thick eyebrows raised up in question. Even thicker ridges formed across his brow. I could not even conceive of how all that skin stayed in place. It should have hung low on his chest like a decades-old beard.